Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio. Today on the show, we're going to have Anna Zinkhan, who has been the lead person to kind of take over the fight against SD1 in Northern Kentucky, especially in regard to the Camp Springs forced main and pipeline that's going to take place there. So we're going to have Anna on the show to talk about everything that's not been reported. You should definitely stick around. But first, a quick message from Omega Processing. Omega Processing is the sole sponsor for Thomas Matters Radio. They've been such a good supporter, and if you're a small local business, you should be calling them for all your credit card processing needs. OmegaP.com. Let's go! So I have Anna Zinkhan on the show today on For Thomas Matters Radio. This is Mark Collier once again. Anna is part of the Camp Springs Initiative, which was started back in 2006. She's now the president of Preserve and Protect Camp Springs Incorporated, and she's the owner of Misty Ridge Farm. Anna, how did I do?
You did great.
Did I get them all right?
Yeah, I think you did.
Okay. So what are we talking about today, right? So you've always been, you're in Camp Springs.
Yes.
You have a vested interest in this community. SD1 has kind of said that they have this decree from the federal government to build a forced main through your community. Where are we on this right now? Is it going to happen? There's lawsuits pending. Mm-hmm. You are smack dab in the middle of all this. Tell me where we are from when this started to where we are today.
Well, and for everyone's understanding, the consent decree was an SD1's management agreement with the EPA to alleviate sewer overflows, whether they come from a combined sewer and storm overflow, which are supposed to be eliminated, it's separated,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's a sewer that has too much water getting in it that's not supposed to be.
So why is this such a big deal for you and your community?
SD1 has chosen a route to take storm water, not just sewer, through our community as the cheapest, most inexpensive, they think it's the most sustainable route to the Eastern Regional Plant. This is sewer and storm water that's currently going to the Kenton County plant, and they want to route it through Camp Springs because they think it's the quickest way.
Is it the quickest way?
It might be the shortest distance to put pipe, but it's not the only solution. But it's the only thing that SD1 considered was gray infrastructure and no green technology.
So you obviously don't want this through Camp Springs. Camp Springs has kind of coalesced together, mm-hmm. and they've said that they don't want it. SD1 is at this point saying what?
SD1 is saying that we must do it for public health and because of the consent decree. That's been the only argument we have heard, but mostly that argument has come from our own Judge Pendry.
So you have been intimately involved with this for how many years
now? 6 years.
6 years. Mm-hmm. Probably more so than some of the current board members that have.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do they ever, I'm sure this happens all the time. Do they ever like kind of step in something and you have to correct them?
Yeah. Well, or we take information to them and they start taking notes and they start looking for things that they can ask the staff about and get more explanation on. They only get what the staff volunteers to them or they think to ask. They don't always know everything, but the majority of the SD1 board members are really into doing the right thing. And there wasn't a lot of oversight before. It was a lot of rubber stamping, and it's been changed in the last 3 years dramatically.
What was the change?
New board members who really wanted to look at making a change with SD1. We learned that SD1 has been a bully in the Northern Kentucky area for a long time. They have a $90 million budget, and they have a lot of power. Try to hire someone to go against them, and you'll find that.
So, and you have.
Absolutely, we've tried.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
What's the status of the lawsuits? What's the purpose of them?
Well, the first one is the eminent domain lawsuit where they're trying to take our property forcefully. There are 12 property owners who are battling SD1 through the eminent domain. We had a trial, 2 days of trial with Judge Ward, and we're still waiting her decision. She hasn't ruled yet.
When was that?
The end of June. So, and on our second one is we have a lawsuit that we filed against SD1, the Kentucky Infrastructure Authority, and the Kentucky Division of Water in Franklin Circuit Court with Judge Shepard. That is on environmental concerns. this project skirted a lot of the requirements of the feds to be able to borrow and use some federal money. And in the beginning, we found this, but we couldn't hire anybody to help us understand and to really investigate and see if it was true. When we did this lawsuit, it was RIA, some environmental attorneys that we hired and put up some big dollars for, and they've been doing the investigation and said, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of problems with this from a green and an environmental standpoint.
So let's talk about the makeup of Camp Springs. It's a rural community in southern mm-hmm. Campbell County. There's no centralized government. I've read, and I can't remember if it was in your PowerPoint or something that you said during a meeting or something like that, that SD1 basically thought that because there was no centralized government, they were going to be able to just kind of do what they want.
Right. They thought, well, it's just a bunch of farmers. It's just farmland. It should be simple to go right through there. And they didn't do any investigation into what kind of farming it was.
And what do you think they, if they knew the kind of makeup that consisted of the people of Camp Springs right now, do you think they would have tried that same tactic?
No, I do not. Our roots are very deep there. We have people that have lived there since their families immigrated from Germany.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got 150 years of history sitting there. And the makeup of the 12 landowners that are holding it are pretty much people who have been there for generations. And we like how we live. We want to protect it. Look how Fort Thomas likes how they live, and they protect it. We're doing the same thing.
So give me, though, this has been written about a few times. We've mm-hmm. written about it. Some of our competitors have mm-hmm. as well. What are some of the things that maybe haven't made those, you know, those papers or what's being left on the ground that people don't know about?
Well, people look at us sometimes and go really nicely, why don't you want sewer? Well, we're not getting sewer. This is a pressurized pipe that in the beginning they told us that you cannot tap into it. If there's any kind of malfunction, you'll have a sewer fountain coming through your roof.
We'll talk about that.
the sewer that's going out on the ground is not in anyone's yard. It's not in anyone's street. It is down in an area along the creek and industrial road that floods. So it's a flood area. Nobody uses it for anything other than there are some trails that, you know, we have ridden as horse people. And you see the sewer lids open up when there's too much rain, and the rain forces the sewer out on the ground. It's not nice. We want it cleaned up. But the pollution in the creek goes all the way up 4 Mile from straight line pipes of houses that were built in the 1800s when there was no such thing as a septic tank, that we wanted help with cleaning that up. This project cleans up the sewer at Industrial Road. It does nothing for the whole 4 Mile Creek.
So what does fiscal court say when you tell them that, or SD1 or...
That we have to do this project, and that's all there is to it. And it's like, but there's things that are being left out. You're talking about over $25 million to put a pipe in that's not going to address most of the fecal matter or the pollution in the creek. So you're still going to have pollution going into the Ohio River above the intakes.
What is in it for SD1 or fiscal court to say that?
That's what we can't figure out. Why are they so dead set in doing it this way? And there's been no room for change. Now, what they'll say is that, oh, we looked at 7 alternative routes. Those routes were like drawn on a map with a crayon. They were not investigated, real solid, make sense routes. There was no investigation into alternative solutions, like, do we need some kind of way to process that storm water right there in some other kind of green technology so it doesn't go into the river? Because what you're doing is you're going to tear up 5 miles of the most scenic, pretty area of Campbell County that's rural. And you don't fix that. You don't grow 100-year trees back right away. And they didn't look at what kind of green solution or a solution that would be less expensive. The money for the pipe alone is one big expense. The other expense is you're going to pump this water, and it's mostly rainwater, uphill 300 feet, forever. The utility bills have not been taken into consideration for this. And this is what makes your rates go up. Not spending and using the money the ratepayers are paying for their sewer in a financially sound way.
So you don't have sewer in Camp Springs. You're not a ratepayer.
Exactly.
So, I mean, do you think that if the actual ratepayers knew this, that they'd jump on your bandwagon?
Absolutely. If they knew the truth of how money is wasted at SD1, I've been sitting in a board meetings for almost 4 years now. Some of the things that have been brought out in the board meetings will curl your toes when it comes to wasting money. For example, one of the board members was looking at really analyzing the check register. And he said, so I see that we have an aerator pump that's been down at one of the, I think it was Dry Creek. He said, and they said, oh yeah, you know, those aerator pumps are really expensive. It's a $125,000 machine. So we're looking at whether we should get it rebuilt, buy a new one, or buy a reconditioned one. And the board member says, well, that's really good logic. I'm glad to hear that. But in this year, it's taken you a year and you haven't really done anything yet. They go, well, yeah, no, we didn't expect it to take that long, but it has been a year. He said, you've spent $450,000 extra in electricity.
Because it's been down.
Yeah. And I'm like, my gosh, that's horrible. But that's just one small example of things that go on.
What's another one that you've been surprised to hear?
Really surprising was the project down in Bellevue where the collapsed pipe is. Okay.
Talk about Riviera Drive. Yeah. So like if you're going past Frisch's towards the party source.
Yeah. Yeah. That they've been hand digging a tunnel. So that project was something that there was a known problem. And I guess they had been on bypass to getting the sewer and managing it for probably a year. When all of a sudden the board is presented with this, guess what? We decided to repair this. And they're like, and how come you picked this and signed a contract for this to be hand dug? Well, it's an emergency. And the board is fuming. This has been a problem for a year, but management at SD1 decided how they wanted to address it. And they went into over $1 million contract without the board's approval because they deemed it an emergency. How's it an emergency when you've known about the problem for a year? That was the board's thing. And there's nothing they could do about it.
I guess all of those issues by themselves are troubling to me. Does this come, I guess the main question, does this all kind of stem from the power that non-elected officials have? I mean, conceivably all of the SD1 board appointments are appointed, right? They're not elected.
Well, but see, I think it's backwards. The board is being controlled by the staff. The board didn't get to make a decision and ask questions.
So you think it's from the staff?
The staff is the problem. And the staff at the time was Dave Reger was the executive director.
Do you know, side note, what job he's taken now?
No, I do not.
Okay.
No, continue. I haven't heard. I've been too busy with this. Yeah. I can't get into that. So the power of the executive director and policy is that it's amazing how the board will say, well, how come we didn't get told this before now? Well, the policy is that we have the right to make these changes or to make or implement things. So it's really been sad. And the board is trying to, there's no policy book or they're working on one, but they're also trying to rewrite a lot of policy that was the way the staff did business. So they are trying to get their arms around this and figure out how to change the target and so that they can influence the decisions and have part of the and have part in the decision making process. They're not being included usually. So
yeah, that's
and that, yes, they're the ones financially if judicially responsible for
sure
it, right.
You've taken a lead role on this project from the Camp Springs end, and you've mentioned that, you know, to me before we came on the podcast about having a target on your back. Talk about that.
Well, I'm lucky enough in the type of business that I have and where I'm trying to learn to be partly retired that I could put a lot of time into this that the rest of the property owners couldn't. So I'm the one going and meeting with everyone. I'm also the one that where when we learn about something that's very discerning, we have to make the decision to bring it public. And one of them is the Chuck Heilman things, being that he's an SD1 board member. I've known Chuck and Judy and Christina for many years. Christina started riding with me and grew up with me.
Let's pause for a second and just give a little bit of background. So Chuck Heilman is he a Camp Springs resident?
Yes.
He's a Camp Springs resident. He's an SD1 board member. You know the story. Why don't you give some background on that?
Well, because we trail rode on his property, but you know, we were privy that he was building a barn for his business there. And during some of this SD1 and working with lawyers and lawsuits and talking about each one of the board members and what we knew about them from the years of going to the meeting, Chuck's name came up as to, well, where does he work? And I'm like, well, his business is at his home. And the attorney's antennas went up. And go, what do you mean? What does he do? And when I told him what I understood about his business, they're like, well, it's not zoned for that. How can he be doing a manufacturing business in a rural residential area? So, That came out. So that came out by us. Actually, what was really weird is that we went to planning and zoning and said, just records request, show us all the permits he has pulled in the last 10 years. And it showed all the permits that, you know, are required for his home addition, for changes to his home and this and that. And then there's one for the barn. It's just building a barn using a farm exemption status. So no permitting is needed because, you know, it's in within boundaries and no inspections are needed. So that's a barn. Admit, I know that there's a manufacturing business in it. So by asking for those permits on a Friday afternoon, Mr. Heilman was at my house on Monday morning. And he's like, we need to talk. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm headed out. We can talk later. So I don't understand how that process can be that open when if you go down there and you want to learn something about who has an occupational license, you're not allowed to be told. They will not divulge that. Yet, you know, right away, I have to be on the defensive because I asked for information that was
sure
public.
Has it been uncomfortable for you?
It's been a little uncomfortable, but, you know, I met with Chuck and Judy. We had lunch, and I'm like, and, you know, we have a lot of history, and I don't want this to be personal, and they don't either. But it's a very uncomfortable subject. You know, Judge Pendry is a very good friend of Chuck's. I have seen Judge Pendry at his house, Cuttonwood. It's a great place to go. It's the old Pay Lakes there on Darlington Road, and it's like, he knows he was doing a business there. I'm on the fire district board. I know that we didn't know about that being a business because it didn't go through the right channels. We're supposed to inspect all the businesses to make sure people are safe.
Sure.
So just on any number of reasons why you're supposed to go through the process is for everyone. And if Chuck is on the SD1 board and his business is violating some rules, is there any reason he's voted erratically in regards to Ash Street? It's Ash Street is not going through his property, and Chuck's not an SD1 ratepayer, but he had power there to influence.
Let's talk about the board's votes on Ash Street from, you know, when this started to now. Has there been used the word erratic. Mm-hmm. Would you characterize that voting trend throughout the court, you know, the whole board? Have they all been voting the same? Has it been up and down? Has there been peaks and valleys for you?
No, I think they've all been voting the same with the exception of Chuck. You know, at first Chuck recused himself, and which is probably where he should stay and should not vote in this since he lives in that community. But then he put himself back into the voting and he didn't say why, and he voted no.
When did he do that?
Oh, gosh, now you're going to challenge me, my brain. Years. It's been several years.
Not recent.
And I believe he did that because he had an idea for another route that he wanted to investigate. And he did. He put a lot of time into that. I helped him. We looked at it. And it was a route that would go still back Owl Creek, hit East Alexander Pike, and then come up Low Gap to the AA and go down. But SD1's engineers had costed it out and said it would still cost more money than going through Camp Springs. It would have still crossed my farm, and that would have been okay. I'm not in the historic area. My farm, I can manage what needs to be done and feel secure that I can work still. But when you've got 6 or 7 air release valves in a valley and you're trying to do agritourism and it involves the stone houses, and it doesn't belong there.
Sure.
You know, it's a whole big difference.
So. Well, you know the makeup of the board probably better than anybody. Back then and now. I think probably, and this is where my previous question about unelected officials.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that's in the media, I might know a few of the board members, but I don't know them all.
Right.
I don't know who to talk to. So talk about the specific makeup right now. Who do you believe, you know, you have an opportunity to talk to and have open conversations with? Is there anybody that has just completely shut you out?
No. All the board members have been very, very kind and very generous. And, you know, what's interesting is our representatives, you know, Chuck did put effort into finding an alternative. Robert Horine, who's a Kenton County resident, sits on the board for Campbell County. I find that very still uncomfortable, and we spoke out against that at one of the fiscal court meetings. Mm-hmm. Rick Wessels and Wessels Construction has been on there now for, this is his second term. Excellent. His background in construction brings a lot to it, and he looks at everything, every aspect, and you can tell he does a lot of homework outside the meetings. As well as Bob Schroeder, who also is in the home builders industry and brings something to it. Now, the newer ones, Bob Boswell, he has really getting up to speed now, and that's been a year on the board, and he's very easy to talk to and to ask questions. Gary Richardson was an executive director for SD1 many years ago, and he has a really solid understanding, and the staff, so to speak, can't blow smoke up his skirt.
Sure.
Because he really gets it.
So what votes do the board control on this issue at this point?
Well, right now, the last vote that was taken on the Ash Street project was to vote to finalize go after property through eminent domain. They had to agree to that. Boswell voted against it. He said, I was on the tank board. We did an eminent domain. It did not work out well. We wasted a lot of time and money. I will never do that again. The other side of that vote was to secure bid documents. It was never, that's all the further it's been voted on. Eminent domain, get the land, and let's bid this project. And I think it stopped at that because the board is listening to us and we're saying, the staff is giving you numbers from 2011 on our project, but these other routes are 2014 prices. That's a big
sure.
A big difference.
Sure.
And now we're in 2016. How much more do you think those prices have gone up? But the numbers are not changing. The other side of that is when 2011, some of the things that were changed by the Corps of Engineers is to not open dig any of the creek. You got to bore. Okay, so 2011, now we're boring. Prices have not raised much. We're going to bore Meltner's Farm over 1,000 feet underground. They're going to bore my creek. They're boring 19 places along 4 Mile Creek. Now, boring's not beautiful either because they still have to dig a pit on both sides. So prices are a problem. I think the board believes us, and that's why they said we're only going to approve the bidding. We want to see what the bids come in at. Very smart. Very smart on their part.
Yeah.
They're looking out for the ratepayers. The SD1 is in debt so far. The ratio of debt to what they have coming in, they don't have any room to make mistakes. And they're trying to get them to be better run business. And if they can do that, they can control the rates. What's sad is that we're always hearing from the Campbell County constituents, we got to raise the rates. We got to raise the rates and bring in more money because SD1 needs money. The board is sitting here going, we've been through presentation upon presentation telling you they're wasting money. We don't want to raise rates. Let us get a hold of this animal and slow it down from its bad habits.
Let me go back a little bit mm-hmm. to when this whole thing started. When did the tenor of the conversation go from, you know, constituents of Campbell County working with SD1, trying to learn about this project to it being contentious? Was there a specific instance that you can remember?
Oh, very, very clearly. So we received letters in July of 2010 asking for access to our property for surveying. And the surveying would be done for improvements to sewer. So I'm like, I called up SD1. I'm like, we don't have sewer. How can you improve our sewer? Oh, well, we're looking at putting sewer in out there. And I'm like, wow, that's big. Sure. Okay. So I got questions and I think a lot of property owners will. And why don't we have one meeting so we can all hear the same answers and we can all hear from each other's questions. Mm-hmm. So we met in August of 2010, a meeting that I put on with at our firehouse. SD1 presented all their diagrams and all the blueprints. And we got a lot of questions answered. And one person raised their hand and said, what's in it for us? And it's like, oh, well, that's very obvious. And they said, they looked at each other, all the SD1 vendors, and there was three vendors in SD1, and they said, well, there's nothing in it for you guys. We didn't know you needed anything. Okay, so we told them, we have straight pipes, we know we have our sewer, our creek is contaminated, and they said, look, we're in design, let us go back and work on design, and we'll see what we can do for you. So we were so happy, because if we're going to do this project, we wanted it to make it the best. We don't want to, we want to help them make it more affordable. Sure. And really accomplish something. So we left the meeting on a very positive note. Judge Pendu was there that night and he said, I just hope the Cannon Springs people can accept change. That was his biggest comment. So months go by, we hear nothing. In November, we start receiving letters in the mail again, but these letters are easements. Please sign this easement for the sewer. So I called the vendors who had come in SD1, and I went down the list, and the one vendor said, oh, you better call the next guy. I don't know what happened. I know we were supposed to come back to you. On down and so and so. So none of the vendors had a clue and could give me any insight as to what they had come up with in a design. But while I was driving down the highway, I was on Interstate 75 going to Lexington, and Mr. Kyle Boyles from SD1 calls me. He goes, why are you calling everyone? And I said, well, we want to know what you came up with. We're truly interested in what you came up with design. He said, we got signatures. We don't need to talk to you people again.
Signatures from whom?
Some of our elderly homeowners signed the easement. They felt threatened that we're just going to take your land if you don't sign and agree. And here's the money we've offered you. They were bullied. And many of us have been. We've gotten appraised values offers, and then we've gotten lower offers, and then we've gotten another higher offer. You're not supposed to use that tactic when you're the utility working for the people, So there's been a lot of bullying. And yeah, I have a target on my back because they didn't even try to negotiate with me and any of the needs that my business would have for it. I mean, I guess they figured, wouldn't matter.
Would it?
Only if they're really truly going to negotiate, not just give us lip service, they didn't really make much attempt to satisfy people's needs. In public record, they'll tell you, oh, well, we're putting scrubbers in these valves, so they're not going to smell. But yet we had a meeting with the manufacturers of those scrubbers for those air release valves. And they said, oh, yeah, they can if they're not maintained properly. If what goes into the sewer that day isn't treated chemically at the pump, then it's going to smell. And it'll take a couple weeks to clear that up. Well, look, it's August and it's hot and humid. If it starts smelling on that day and we're having an environment, a farm event, what are people going to think?
Sure.
Are they going to come back when it smells like sewer? So, and one comment they made is, well, you guys are used to manure. You have cows and horses. So it's a smell is okay. It's like, that's not the same smell as human sewage at all. So,
well, how do you measure that metric anyway?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But those are some of the things that have been told to us. What's sad about this is a lot of the work that we have dug in and discovered and took and take to the SD1 board has caused SD1 to fix things to the way it's supposed to be.
Like what? Let's do
when we talked about we're going to lose trees. So then they brought in an arborist to evaluate the historic trees only on the historic property so that they can try to protect them and work around them and go around them. But when we had issues with the air release valves, that's when they brought in, well, we're going to put these canisters of carbon and things like that. And they're going to be underground. So they made these concessions, but it's still all about the same project. It's not about looking at whether there's a green solution. What about taking the storm water out of the pipes so the sewer can't come on the ground in Silver Grove? That would be much simpler than running a pipe, you know, for $25 million.
Yeah. I'm looking at you've created a PowerPoint for the board and staff.
Which I wasn't allowed to use. The attorney wouldn't let me use it.
Your attorney?
No, the SD1 attorney. So we go to court. We're in eminent domain. The judges want you to mediate. We got Franklin Circuit Court waiting on Judge Ward, and we're going to have to mediate. So I go to the board saying, look, here's something to think about. Before the meeting can start, the SD1 staff attorney, Brian Ellerman, says, I'm not allowing that. We're in litigation. You cannot show a PowerPoint. I'm like, why? We want to work through this. We want to come up with a solution. This idea gets us out of litigation.
So I'm just going to read the benefit page, and then we can backtrack. Here are the benefits that you are presenting. You get it out of Four Mile Valley. You end the legal battles. You still eliminate sewer overflow in Silver Grove. You add new customers, new revenue. It's less expensive, only $17 million by SD1 figures.
Yes.
So what am I missing?
Exactly. What are we missing? Because this is Route 2A, one of the alternatives that SD1 used to compare against going through Camp Springs. That we're like, okay, 2A, in their budget this year, they've added this $12 million item that's going to take sewer from US 27
to the AA.
Down the AA so that you can develop the land across from Myers. That was one of our things. Go up Industrial Road with this. Go out that way.
In Cold Spring that puts you out by Barleycorn.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And they're like, nope. But now they put a $12 million leg of 17A, which was one of SD1's alternatives. These are your estimates by GRW, $17.6 million. Now you've taken $12 million of that, one of those sections, and you've already put it into your budget to be done because it allows development up there in Cold Springs, sure, at land that doesn't have it. So that $5 million remaining, which was where they were going to go up Dodsworth Lane with this pipe, which doesn't make sense. That is such an unstable area.
Residential.
It's area. Residential. Yeah. It's unstable. It's sliding all the time. But you can go part of the way up Industrial Road. There's a big piece of property for sale, and it's a valley with no houses.
It's been for sale for a long time. It's
been for sale a long time. Yeah. They want to develop it. Don't we think they'll sell a utility right? Who, you know?
We don't have to name names
here. No, I don't know who owns it. Okay. I know they don't live around here. They live in Florida. But I've talked to the realtor. You know, it's for sale. It's 20 acres. That land adjoins the Cold Springs City Park and the police station.
Yeah.
Goes right across the road. You can go right across the road through the schoolyards. It's public property.
So you don't need eminent domain.
You don't need eminent domain.
Yeah.
You know, and it's probably an easier route to go. Why wouldn't we do it if it saves money and it gets us? They have spent $200,000 in 6 months fighting us, SD1 has, on attorneys. Now, if you go to their checkbook, you won't see that. What you'll see is $20,000 on Ash Street to one law firm. And then you'll see $97,000 to another law firm for consent decree. And I questioned that. I'm like, okay, so consent decree all along, because there's 4 years of check register out there. Consent decree is only about $2,500 a month, which is a lot of money for reporting to that. And all of a sudden it jumped $8,000 and then $30,000 for consent decree. And I'm like, I asked an attorney friend, I'm like, how can that be? Well, one attorney left a law firm and went to another. And that's where there was also a change in law firms in there. And this is Mr. Bender, who's been the one defending the consent decree since it was signed. And it's been under a lawsuit challenge since then. So Mr. Bender changed law firms. And now we're in Franklin Circuit Court and he's down there. So that is actually him fighting against us on Ash Street. So, but it's still labeled as consent decree.
So they've spent $200,000 of the taxpayers' money.
Of
ratepayers' money in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
How are you guys competing in the arms race? How are you paying your attorneys and doing that?
Well, we did form a nonprofit. So the lawsuit in Franklin Circuit Court is by the nonprofit, and we're all members of it. So there's one bill and 12 of us.
Okay.
And then it's a nonprofit so people can donate and help us. And that's the big thing. We're trying to change the way the sewer is being handled in Northern Kentucky. Now, this is way bigger than Camp Springs.
Sure.
It's just not right to waste the money. And we're the victims of it, but you're all being victimized if you're an SD1 ratepayer. And there are so many issues. SD1 board meetings always have a police officer outside the room. And I found that odd, but there's a lot of angry people that come to SD1 board meetings. You can't get through to them on the phone. Up until just recently, when the board pressured the staff for 2 years, they're being videoed, right? The meetings are now videoed. They've also implemented changes with a new billing system finally, but they could not collect by credit card. They had one phone number, their antiquated phone system. What is their management doing? I ran a help desk for Chiquita. You know, we didn't have 90,000 customers, and I had better staff and more technology 20 years ago. And so when you hear these presentations from the lady who's new to SD1, who's coming in and taking over the help desk in the service center, it was horrible. And that's what SD1's been doing with everyone's money. Their salaries, the staff had to present salary studies for the board. Their salaries were rated higher than most private industry for the same job.
Wow.
This is a utility, people. They have not been scrutinized very much up until the last 3 years for a long time. They've got an attitude. We can do what we want and we get away with it. And the board is fighting that.
So the board, you feel like, is doing a good job. Staff is where you think the issues are stemming from.
And it's being addressed. Dave Reger left. I think Dave Reger left because he was feeling the pressure that the board was not happy with him.
The new director is?
There's just an interim. The interim is Mark Warschmidt, who's been an SD1 engineering guru for many years. I don't think he's capable of thinking outside the box and doing anything besides gray infrastructure. In our studies and things with this, the documents that they are required by the state of Kentucky to complete for the money that they wanted to borrow, they stated they were using green infrastructure on this project, but their own staff member engineer testified in our eminent domain trial, oh no, this is gray. They stated in those documents they're eliminating septic systems. They are not. And that's the work of Mark. Now, Mark is the acting ED. I hope he has not made the ED. He's been passed over 3 times before.
What do you think, what characteristics do you think would make a good executive director of SD1?
Well, they're going to need to be someone with a high moral and the looking out for the people and not for their own accomplishments. And that they have a background in construction. I don't think it has to be sewer. You can get up to date. A lot of it's related to construction, piping and things like that, pumps. I'm not anywhere near an engineer, but I have a farm and I built all my buildings and worked a lot with construction crews. I get it. Doesn't mean I could go build one. But, you know, so there's a lot of questions that the board still has is why do we have so many engineers on staff, but everything is sent out and paid for? This person needs to be able to juggle a lot of balls like any corporate business manager is going to have to do and really evaluate what kind of people they have on staff and management.
So a lot of people probably, they might be hearing about this for the first time right now, just listening to you kind of talk about your past eight or nine years dealing with this thing, which is pretty... That's a big chunk of time.
Well, this project was started by SD1 in 2008. Yeah. We didn't even learn about it till 2010. So this is almost 10 years of the strategy and the way they want to attack the problem.
Where do you want to go next? Obviously, you have a couple of pending lawsuits. Judge Ward is considering run. Franklin Court is considering one as well. What do you want to see changed right now?
What we're hoping for is that this problem of the overflow of sewer, which we want fixed, we're farmers, we're green people. We want a modernization study done. We want to look at this problem and what's the current way to address it, not using 10-year-old philosophy of, well, we need more flow at Eastern Regional because we've only got Conn sewer going into there. That's all been evaluated. It's done. Conn's is fixing their salt content. We have a building growth in Alexandria. This project, the reasons for it are gone. 10 years has gone by.
What there's obviously got to be some advantages for this project that they're citing. Obviously, we talked about the benefits of your alternative 1A or...
Yeah, 2A, using SD1's 2A.
What are they saying? We need this because...
Because we want to get the sewer out of going into the Ohio River where the water intakes are. And that's like, okay, consent decree doesn't tell you what projects you work on and how you solve them.
Which is why they've spent a lot of money fighting it.
Yes, exactly. I feel like the consent decree was an excuse for them to be able to have some collateral to borrow the money to put this solution in. I think there's a bigger problem that's not come out. I know that there is a lot of infrastructure problems in Northern Kentucky. SD1 has a lot of cities with old failing systems. I'm sure Fort Thomas has its share of problems with sewer. So let's not waste money. Let's look at the whole thing and really look at what's the best solution, a modern solution for a problem that exists.
Well, and there is going to be an article on Fort Thomas Matters this week about the Vernon Lane project that they've been studying. And I think they started about a quarter of that project in like 2008 or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I understood.
So the words eminent domain are being floated around Fort Thomas now, which there'll be a story on FortThomasMatters.com this week. You can check that out. I will be writing that. Anna, what else did we miss? What do you want people to know?
I want people to know that we want the right thing done. And it's not an argument of not on our property, because that's not it. I especially don't have problem. I want the right solution for everybody in Northern Kentucky. $40 million was spent on Eastern Regional. It's on the highest point in the county. We have to pump all of our sewer uphill to it. Let's not make another mistake like that. Let's look at what we have to fix and put our money where it's best spent.
Where can people learn more about your initiatives?
You can follow us on campsprings.com. They'll frequently put articles out there. Or we're on Facebook on Preserve and Protect Camp Springs. And I'm available if anybody wants to call me.
Do you want to leave your contact information, or do you want me to put it in the article?
MistyRidgeFarm.com. I have email and our phone numbers out there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Anna Zinkon, thank you so much for being on the show. There will be a follow-up on this on FortThomasMatters.com. And if you want to connect with Anna, you can do so at MistyRidgeFarm.com or Preserve and Protect Camp Springs, Inc.com. This is Mark Collier, Fort Thomas Matters Radio.